Thanks for listening to the Friday Live Extra from NET Radio, a weekly podcast featuring arts and humanities in Nebraska, and an online-only feature we produce in conjunction with our weekly radio show, Friday Live. I'm Genevieve Randall. This week on the podcast, we'll reconnect with Dick Morris, who is curator of the St. Paul Music and Arts series. We'll get a preview of the 17th season for that series a little bit later. We start this week with a discussion of a month-long celebration of Chinese martial arts that centers around a performance at the Lead Center in Lincoln, as well as a Chinese film festival at the Ross Media Arts Center. The Chinese Warriors of Peking will be giving a stage show at the Lead on Sunday, October 21st at 4 p.m. And leading up to that and beyond, there are a number of events, including a lecture and film October 10th. There's a master class in martial arts, a family festival, a music and dance performance at the Sheldon Museum of Art, and much more. So joining me here to talk about all of this are Dr. Gary Yoon, who's a plant pathology professor at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln with 42 years of experience in kung fu, judo, and much more, including lion dance. You'll have to check out our website for a picture of the amazing lion that is sitting here in the studio with us as well. Also, Rose Hoosen, who is participating in many of the events and is an instructional design tech specialist at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. So welcome to both of you.
Well, hello, Genevieve.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's great to have you both here. So the events start with a lecture and film Wednesday, October 10th at the Ross Media Arts Center. Rose, your lecture will precede the film Bruce Lee, A Warrior's Journey. Can you tell us what your lecture is about?
Yes, the topic of diversity, inclusion is a very hot topic today, and there's many different ways that people look at it. And sometimes, you know, there's arguments for both sides. Do we include? Do we not include? And how do we do that in a appropriate way, in an appropriate and a meaningful way? So sometimes I suppose we get a little bit sidetracked into doing what is politically correct. And we always get caught up with the media and how media portrays diversity inclusion or diversity per se. And what is culture? Mm-hmm. Where does it come from? How does it evolve? And how does it impact the daily lives of people today, regardless of what one's background or cultural heritage is? So this is going to be a very lighthearted, entertaining evening. It's not a lecture on academia. Mm-hmm. I will be drawing from a variety of films just to quote them and maybe to talk about some of the people who produce those films. One of them that's popular or that's recent is the Crazy Rich Asians, which brought a lot of people to start conversations about it. So why Asian? Why do we call them crazy? Is it a correct portrayal? Mm-hmm. Is that really an appropriate portrayal? But I selected the film or the documentary of Bruce Lee because Bruce Lee is a public icon, and he is known for martial arts and known as being a popular Hollywood star. The Lead Festival is about martial arts, so this was a specific selected film. But what people don't know about Bruce Lee was he was ostracized by his own community. The Chinese people in the United States thought that he was doing blasphemy because he was one of the first few people who taught non-Chinese people an ancient art that was supposed to be private.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so he was one of the first few people who broke that racial divide. And so I'll be talking a little bit about how all of this fits in together.
Yeah, probably not something the average person might think about immediately when they, you know, just, oh, let's watch a kung fu movie or something like that, right?
Right.
But there are a lot of other issues that tie into that. Well, then Sunday following, October 14th, there is a masterclass in martial arts, and that is at the Lead Commons. And in reading about the description of the Lead Center show by the Chinese Warriors of Peking, they specify that the stage show depicts martial arts disciplines during the Ming Dynasty. So I'm wondering if we can kind of draw some lines here or talk a little bit about history and different kinds of martial arts and how it connects to culture and what you'll be seeing in this masterclass then.
My understanding of what's going to be depicted in the stage performance is that one group of the major characters, they're called the Shaolin monks, or they're the monks of the Shaolin Temple. Now, this is a group of, you can say, legendary heroes or warrior heroes, very famous throughout China. But much of what we know about the Shaolin monks really is based upon legend. Why the Ming Dynasty? Well, that just happened to be a period of time when there was actually according to records, the Shaolin monks were in favor were favored by the Ming Emperor. And so that I think that's the basis for that particular story.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of the connection with my master classes, one of the things that I wanted to bring forward in the master classes is, what is the nature of Chinese martial arts right now?
Yeah.
And again, I can't possibly represent all of Chinese martial arts. I'm just one person, and even though I've had training in two different types of Chinese martial arts, it's only two different types relative to the hundreds of types throughout China.
Yeah.
And so I'm just kind of hoping just to give a glimpse to the attendees of this master class, a glimpse into one style, which is a Choi Lei Fut, one could call it a hard Kung Fu style from southern China, and then also a glimpse into the soft style of martial art called Tai Chi, which I think most people know as maybe understand it as old folks moving slowly in the park. But
which I think it's depicted that way sometimes. But I do hear about it as fitness. But then there's also a little bit of history as to why a slow practice would have been practiced.
Well, there's one reason why it was Tai Chi is practiced slowly is just to allow the person really to inspect and perfect each motion, including how one places the foot onto the ground and stepping with the heel, then putting the foot flat and shifting the weight and so on.
Mm.
So that really allows a very fine tuning of our motor skills. That's the way the art is trained in the beginning stages. But originally as a martial art, as a form of self-defense, then one would go from the strictly the slow style of movement and then move into moving in real time, in real speed.
Right.
But so I'm going to feature a little bit of weapons work, actually. That's really the primary theme of this master's classes. Weapons work from the point of view of the Tai Chi, from the Choi Lei Fut, and also we're having Joe Wallen, which Genevieve, you're familiar with.
I am familiar with Joe. We've met.
Yes. Joe, he has also training in various styles of Chinese martial arts as well,
mm-hmm.
and he's going to help us present some elements from Bagua martial arts. And just to be specific in terms of what we're going to be teaching or sharing,
mm-hmm.
I will be teaching a little bit of how in the Taiji system we use the straight sword called the Jin. Think of it as kind of a delicate blade weapon.
Hmm.
And Joe Wallen is going to demonstrate and lead the group in exercises involving the Bagua Dao, which the Dao means a saber, but this is a very long, heavy weapon.
Hmm.
Then the other weapon that we will be featuring in the master class is simply the staff. So it's a long stick. And the stick is really very important in nearly all Chinese martial arts because that's the entry point to all these fantastic weapons such as the guando and the trident and the spears and so on. But we all start with just a long stick in the hand.
Okay.
The other reason for bringing in the stick is that if you look at the publicity photos of the Peking warriors, that's exactly the weapon that these characters will be wielding.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the manner in which they will be wielding the stick will be different than what I will be teaching. So that's, again, just to provide some contrast with what they're displaying on the stage versus in my style of martial arts we would be using.
Yeah, be able to see some of the differences there. Mm-hmm. Then on October 21st itself, the events get started at 11:30 a.m. There are workshops and free public performances, drummers, demonstrations, hands-on activities for all ages. There's also a pre-performance talk and then the 4 p.m. performance. What are the highlights of that day for each of you there?
The festival or the pre-performance activities that are going to be happening, depending on the weather, we do have plans for both good weather and maybe not so nice weather.
Always a factor.
Yes, so we hope that it'll be nice and we can be outdoors because we've got a lot of different things happening and it's family friendly. We're going to have literally an army of performers on that day. So the lead has invited the Peking Warriors from China, but what would really be nice for people of Lincoln to know is that we have our very own homegrown Lincoln and Omaha practitioners of Chinese martial arts. And I've got a list here. I won't read them, but I just discovered that many of our performers are actually national championship holders.
Oh,
so
wow.
We've got the grand champion from the 2018 National Kung Fu Championships. We also have the champions from the Hand Forms and Short Weapon Championships, the Midwestern Open National Championships, the Adult Women's Champions. So the groups that are going to be performing during the family-friendly festival, these are all going to be performers who are people from here, from Lincoln and Omaha. And in addition to the Kung Fu and martial arts presentations on that day, we'll also have lion dance.
Yes.
And, you know, I think you had mentioned a little bit about we brought one of the lion heads today to the studio. So lion dance is actually practiced as part of martial arts, or should I say they're both taught hand in hand. And I'll let Gary talk a little bit about why those two are there.
Yeah.
But before that, just kind of to give an idea what happens on the 21st, I believe that the setup will be at 11:30 in the morning. The first performance will start at 12. It'll be free and public. And after the performances, there'll be hands-on little mini workshops for kids and adults. So we do have lion heads for kid size. We have lion heads for adult size because in the field, kids are trained at a very, very young age as well. So it'll be something really nice for the public to be able to come and learn about the different martial arts and how they intertwine with lion dance and other types of training ability. So I'm going to go ahead and pass this to Gary so he can tell us a little bit about lion dance. And people may want to know that Gary was the first person to bring lion dance to the Midwest.
Well, I don't know the Midwest, but certainly I was first to bring it to Nebraska.
To Nebraska. Okay, cool. Yeah, right. Tell us a little bit about it and maybe something about this lion head that you've brought with you today.
First of all, in terms of lion dance, you have to remember that China has, I can't remember how many thousands of years of history, but prior to China becoming a Buddhist nation, a Buddhist culture, the primary religion, so to speak, in China really was more animistic beliefs. And so people in primarily in the agrarian cultures, they would do various types of animal dances to evoke the protection and the blessings of animals. And so before even lion dance was invented, they probably were doing dances involving the animals that they knew about, maybe leopards and tigers and so on. And then the whole image of lions was introduced into China probably about close to 2,000 years ago by Buddhist monks coming from India. And maybe people aren't aware of this, but lions ran all over India back in those days. The lions, as we know, had a very broad distribution throughout the world. But they were common in India, and then the Buddhist monks brought to China these tales of these very powerful creatures. And so it was natural that the animal dancers in China then adopted this idea of lions as part of their dance ritual. From that basis, there's two types of lion dance that was developed. One type was done up in the north, and it was primarily just for court entertainment. So it was very light, very acrobatic, and done as a stage type of activity. Down in the south, though, in southern China, lion dance was a very important ritual. I want to say a ritual of exorcism. Hmm. So the lion was danced at every important occasion to drive away evil spirits and also to bring blessings to the audience that was attending. And in order to have the lion to have this exorcism capability or exorcism power, it had to be performed by skilled dancers and dancers of high moral character, physical strength, and daring. And this is where the martial arts comes in. So then traditionally in the South, it was the martial artists, the people who trained in kung fu, who did the lion dancing. And it was also a way for the kung fu people to display their physical prowess and their skills, particularly their footwork. It was a way for them to display their skills in public, because way back in the days, a kung fu person didn't dare display their skills in public because, first of all, it would then expose their techniques to their enemies or to anybody who wanted to do battle with them or to fight with them. And they never showed it in public. But by going out to do the lion dance, you could say to the public, hey, you know, look at my stance, how strong I am, and so on. That's primarily the basis for the Southern lion dance. And now that these two styles have now kind of merged over the last, probably the last 50 to 60 years. And so there are some groups that still do the lion dance for ritualistic purposes, but now it's primarily done as entertainment and also as a sport now. So there's lion dance competitions held throughout the world.
And are the lion dancers here in Nebraska, are there a large number of them in Lincoln? Are there some in other communities as well?
Well, I can only speak for Lincoln. We have several groups in Lincoln that are active in lion dance. One group is a private group, and they also have their students train in kung fu. Hmm. And then there's a fairly large group connected with the Vietnamese Buddhist temple. Mm-hmm. And also I understand there's a group connected with the Vietnamese Catholic Church. And so those two groups, or actually all three groups, really are focused on the training of young people and giving young people a very positive type of activity. And at the same time, you know, keeping the culture alive.
Well, then the final event of all of this month-long celebration is on October 23rd at 7:30 p.m., and that takes place at the Sheldon Museum of Art. Cellist Karen Becker, along with dancer Haiwan Huang, both who are faculty at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, will be joined by some others, and that performance is called Rhythm of Peace, Movement for Change. I'm wondering what you can tell us about that event as well.
So that is actually a performance that is hosted by the Glencorf School of Music. And that title that you mentioned, that's the title of their event. One of the pieces in there is related to martial arts. And that piece is called Lifetime, which is an acronym, a long one. It's liminality in flux, experience transitioning in motion eternally. So yeah, it's a mouthful. And I'll be performing that as well, together with Haiwan Huang, and Karen will be playing the cello. It's an original piece by Karen in terms of the music. Also an original choreography by Haiwan Huang and myself. And we also have a guest visual artist, Jerry Dobas, who's going to be joining us. She designed some of the props. It is a fusion piece between Tai Chi, the soft internal martial arts that Gary talked about just now, and modern dance. It was specifically selected because the concept of the dance is about lifetime and the struggle between the old generation, the new generation, the internal philosophies that we have for ourselves and the external environments that we live in and how it all wells together. So that would be a free performance at the Sheldon. And the visual arts that goes with it is actually part of a larger project. And that's with Jerry Dobas. We wanted to invite the public to be a part of this performance. And so there's a series of workshops currently going on where Jerry is out in the communities, running free workshops to the public, where the public will be creating some of the art pieces that's part of our performance. So that part is also involving...
Very collaborative.
Very collaborative, that's right. So I think philosophically we decided to have that as part of the performance because martial arts in the Chinese culture, I think the vocabulary that most people know is kung fu, and I know Gary taught me the meaning of kung fu in Chinese. It literally just means hard work. And so kung fu is a generic catch-all term culturally, historically, and we wanted to make sure that the last piece of this month-long is actually something that talks about the original concept of kung fu, that it's not some very unique thing that's only practiced by a small group of people, but it's actually a philosophy that can be internalized by everyone. And so this piece is a fusion piece. You may or may not be able to immediately see the connection to martial arts because we have really married it with modern dance. Mm-hmm. But the idea and the concept is that we're taking some philosophies from this ancient discipline and showing how it can be a part of everyday life.
Stepping back for just a moment and thinking about this entire month-long celebration, what do you hope are the main outcomes of all these events and having all these events available to the public during October?
Well, one thing I would hope that the general community would get from this event is that Chinese martial arts aren't just something you see on film or necessarily on stage. This Chinese martial arts, for some of us, is just a part of our everyday living, and it can be very much a part of the lives of any normal Lincoln citizen.
Yeah.
It could be enjoyed as an exercise form. As Rose said, one could also adopt some of the philosophies and concepts as and internalize that as a way of living. And certainly, you know, Chinese martial arts can be practiced as a form of self-defense, though that's not, you know, actually one element that we necessarily emphasize too much. So we're trying to perhaps dispel some of the misconceptions about Chinese martial arts and bring it to a broader audience.
Rose, did you have anything to add to that?
Well, in addition to the word kung fu, that most people know the word but maybe not realize where the actual meaning of it comes from, another thing that a lot of people may have seen or know about and have used it even in non-Chinese martial arts context is the image of the yin-yang form, a circle with the black and white halves, which are seemingly symmetrical, but if you look carefully, they're not quite identical. They balance. That's actually a philosophy, and that it's adopted into everyday life. And a lot of the ancient philosophies that are affiliated with the concepts of yin-yang, you know, of balance, of two polar opposite extremes being able to function together and in dynamic movement, you can apply that to anything. And so in the month-long event, I know when working with our organizers in the lead, we selected a variety of events to show the breadth of how some of these philosophies do become a part of modern daily life, in professional life, in academic life, in just daily everybody's life. And so I think I do hope that maybe people will realize that we can drop the ethnic title. We can even drop the martial title and just say that this is a month-long celebration of life. Whatever historical, cultural backgrounds we come from, maybe we can examine it and not put labels on it and just say, hey, you know, there are things that people have been doing for millennia, and there's got to be a reason why it's still around today.
I've been talking here with Rose Husin and Gary Yoon about this month-long celebration in collaboration with the Lead Center for Performing Arts and several community members. There is a stage show that this has been centered around and a Chinese film festival as well at the Ross Media Arts Center, and links to more information about all of the events going on, including the Glencore School of Music event and everything we've been talking about, can be found on the Friday Live page, and that is at netnebraska.org. org. So thank you, Rose and Gary, so much. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much, Genevieve. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
And for the second half of our podcast this week, a preview of the next St. Paul United Methodist Church Music and Arts Series performance. The first concert of the brand new season is October 5th.
And would you believe it's the 17th
season? Is this the 17th season?
17th season.
So the 17th season. Doors opening at 11:30 for lunch, which is before and after the concert, and the music itself starting at 12:10. And of course, there's also artwork, I think, in Payne Parlor every month. And Dick Morris, whose voice you're hearing, is curator for that longtime series and joins me. Welcome back, Dick.
Oh, it's so good to be back. Good to see you.
It's good to see you, too. So we just talked about how it's 17 seasons, but you haven't been with the series for 17 seasons.
This is my fourth or fifth.
Okay.
Fifth, I think.
And you inherited it from someone before you.
Yes.
Before we talk about this first performance, how many concerts are there in the entire season and what kind of variety can we look forward to?
There's 9 concerts, 9 months, all the way from what we're doing this time to the Rangbrook Trio, Elizabethan Christmas from Wesleyan. Then we're going to celebrate the 4 keyboards of the church.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We're going to have the Choral de Flauti, as we always do. We're going to have music students from Concordia,
uh-huh.
Alan Mattingly with the Husker Horn Club,
French
Bellissimo.
Horn Choir. Uh-huh. Oh, Bellissimo, the bell choir.
Yeah, yep. And then end with the summer choir camp from Wesleyan again. Wide variety of things.
Yeah,
yes.
Very wide variety. How are the art displays in Payne Parlor curated? Who's responsible for that?
There's a couple, the Stilettos, who are very active at St. Paul, who basically work with that. We work a lot with Noyes Gallery and people like that.
Mm-hmm.
This month, it's Greg Sparling, who does, it's brilliant work. It's very bright, very happy, and then all the way from paintings to woodworking. He's a very flexible artist.
Versatile
and that
artist.
Will be in place in Payne Parlor for the entire month.
For the performance, then, that is happening on October 5th, you have a number of guests coming to perform with you. Your name is even in the title of the concert,
That's
Dick.
Right.
Dick Morris and friends. So who are these friends, Dick?
The friends are, this time, Bridget Hill, who is a third-year doctoral student in flute performance and a good friend of our church. Catherine Bobst, a marvelous soprano. Bob Snyder, of course, that's the name everyone knows. He's going to play on the xylophone.
Great percussionist.
And then Willa Foster Jones will be doing 2 numbers on the harpsichord. And then we conclude with me at the organ doing a Mendelssohn work.
Again, this highlights several instruments at the
church.
That's
right, the harpsichord, the piano, the organ, flute, xylophone. Yeah.
And the harpsichord was sort of a recent acquisition. How long has it been at the church now?
We got it around Easter time, and it's a 2-manual Zuckerman harpsichord, and we're just thrilled to have it. It sits there all the time.
So for this first concert, a wide variety then of styles as well, as
I see.
Bob is playing a really fun piece. How would you describe this xylophonia piece?
Okay, xylophone, of course, but you'll hear duck calls and whistles and who else knows whatever he comes up with. And I've tried to work on the organ so that it sounds like the mighty Wurlitzer.
Uh-huh.
So this is going to be a real fun piece, yeah.
Well, it sounds like an interesting kickoff to the whole series. Dick Morris is a musician performing on that opening concert for the season St. Paul United Methodist Music and Arts Series. He also curates the music portion of the series. And again, that opening concert is October 5th, with music starting at 12:10 p.m.
Right.
Of course, the historic McKinley Bells will be playing.
And we're hoping
ahead of that
they're
concert.
Being repaired. If the work isn't finished, we may not get to hear them, but hopefully.
Okay.
Yes.
What kinds of repairs did the bells need?
It's the transmission part, the connecting and all that is, after 100-plus years, needs a little TLC. And so we're working with the Verdon Company on that. And they're supposed to be there this week. But in the meantime, the bells have been silent for several months.
Oh, wow.
But they'll be back as soon as possible.
And the name of the artist in Payne Parlor once again
Greg
for this month?
Greg Sparling.
Dick, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure.
Well, it's always great to be here, too. Thank you, Genevieve.
We'll see you again.
Okay.
The Friday Live Extra is a weekly podcast from NET Radio. Production help from Dave Hughes. Our theme music is by Alexios Anest. You can learn more about people and groups involved in arts and humanities in Nebraska by listening to Friday Live, broadcast statewide each week on NET Radio, streaming audio and video online at netnebraska.org, and also available as a podcast. I'm Genevieve Randall.